Okay, you're back with us for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Steve Forbes. Steve Forbes, Chairman and Editor-in-Chief of ForbesMedia.com. It is an honor and a privilege to have him back on the show today. Welcome back, Steve Forbes.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
In your latest bestseller, Money, How the Destruction of the Dollar Threatens the Global Economy and What We Can Do About It, you outline some pertinent steps required to heal our global economy, and you say money is our best hope, sound money, for a true recovery and a healthy global economy. I wonder if you would outline why you say money is so misunderstood and the conditions are only getting worse since we severed, you know, the gold standard back in 1971. Please tell us more.
The fact of the matter is money is essential for a functioning economy, for being able to make progress, for making investments. We do around the world billions of transactions each day, and money makes those transactions easier. That's why thousands of years ago we moved away from barter. But money, to work the way it should, has to have a stable value. You know, money measures wealth, money measures value the way, say, scales measure weight, or clocks measure time, or rulers measure length. And when you have an unstable value for money, it is chaotic. You don't get as much economic growth. You don't get as much job-creating investment. It's like a clock. Imagine how chaotic a life would be if the number of minutes in an hour changed each day. We want a clock that is stable. We don't want it too fast, and we don't want it too slow. We want it just right. And the same is true of money. When money has a fixed value, and gold is the best way to ensure that fixed value, then we have a chance, and history shows we do better having a stable value than the chaos we have today.
And I know that you've also investigated how money and value are functions of wealth. And I think this is a key component to investment success. I wonder if you might highlight your outlook and your reasoning regarding real wealth. Maybe you could tell folks what this is and why it's so important.
Well, money today is not wealth in and of itself. It measures wealth. It facilitates that buying and selling that creates wealth. And unfortunately, governments around the world have this notion that if you create money out of thin air, that somehow creates wealth. It's like the counterfeiter in a basement. Counterfeiting, as we know, is illegal. But when the government does it, they call it quantitative easing or stimulus. It's very destructive. Now, right now, the dollar has done well vis-a-vis other currencies. But again, that's like your watch or a clock. You don't want it to be fast. You don't want it to be slow. You want it to be just right. So the chaos in the dollar right now, usually it goes down, but occasionally goes up, is very, very disruptive.
And speaking of disruptive, sound money, the grease in the cogs behind a well-functioning society. And I wonder if you might tell people and outline why it's so critical that sound money keeps those cogs spinning freely.
Absolutely. When you make it easier for people to buy and sell with one another, transact with each other, make it easier for to do investing, you'll get more investing. Now, as we know, for example, on investing is a risky activity. When you're building a facility or trying to create a new product or service, it's risky enough. But if you don't know what you're going to get paid back in 3 years, 5 years down the road, whether it's going to be a 100-cent dollar, 80-cent dollar, 10-cent dollar, you get less investing in the things that are unseen. And there's another aspect for this in terms of making for a smooth functioning society, and that is what we call in the book social trust. We have a chapter on this, chapter 5, where we point out that when you have unstable money, when people cease to trust money, they cease to trust each other. And it leads to political conflict, more bitter political conflict. It leads to economic stagnation, which makes people feel there is no future. So you get more social divisions. Point out that in countries that traditionally have weak currencies have more crime than those countries that have stable currencies. So this goes beyond just GDP and things like that. This gets to the core of a civil society.
You talk about smooth running and functioning economy. We've certainly seen many potholes, have we not, in recent years? It seems almost to be accelerating. Perhaps that's just a function of those of us who view the markets on a more regular basis than others. But you have noted that monetary policy glitches oftentimes lead to problems. I wonder if you might give people an overview of just what type of problems we've seen and what we might see in the future stemming from these central bank errors.
Well, we see it unfold now around the world. We see it in Greece, which is going through a terrible time, is going to go through worse. We see it in Europe, where they're now in recession. We see it in Japan, which is now in recession. China is now slowing. Canada is slowing. The U.S. is doing a little better, but we look good only because the rest of the world is doing far worse. And in terms of we've seen already the fact that 6 years in a recovery, we have incomes, median incomes, lower today than they were in the year 2007. So when the president talks about his love of the middle class, well, his policies and the policies of others have done just the opposite. They've made the middle class worse, not better.
You've laid out an interesting diagnosis, and I wonder if you could perhaps present the panacea. As you do in your bestseller, you note there are ways to reestablish the strength of the greenback, as well as currencies that have sort of followed our lead throughout the world, and this could be a key to recovery throughout the global geopolitical sphere. I wonder if you could tell us more.
Well, the key is to relink the dollar to gold. There's not the gold standard. There are gold standards, and we point out in the book there are various ways you can do it. But like a republic or democracy is supposed to be based on the consent of the governed, you have to have a stable currency. We did this for 180 years in our country. The dollar was linked to gold. And even though we had plenty of ups and downs, two world wars, civil war, Great Depression, other turmoil, the growth rates of that period were without precedent in history, which is how we became the mightiest nation in the world. Since then, for all the ups and downs, our average growth has been less than it was when we had the dollar stable. And today, if we'd maintained those historic growth rates, our economy today would be 50% larger than it is now. In other words, we've lost $8 trillion of economic products and services, higher standard of living, because of what we've done to the dollar. So link it to gold, and it can be done, as we point out in the book. It can be done in a fairly short period, less than a year. And I think that would make the dollar very attractive. People want a stable currency here and around the world.
For over 100 years, the U.S. maintained a bimetallic standard. And for our listeners who aren't aware, of course, that's essentially where gold and silver acted as the de facto currencies. I wonder if you could give us an idea of whether or not that Hugo Salinas Price's idea of reintroducing silver as a monetary metal also makes sense in the context of your gold currency thesis.
Well, gold has demonstrated that it acts as an anchor better than anything else out there. And the challenge with doing both gold and silver, even during the heyday of metallic money, is that the price between the two can vary. We saw that in the late 1800s as people used more and more banknotes that could be converted into gold. The ratio between silver and gold changed dramatically. For a long time, it was roughly 16 ounces of silver equals 1 ounce of gold. Then starting in the late 1800s, it got up to 30 to 1. And today it's about, 60 to 1. The fact that the two don't always go in parallel makes it very difficult. One reason we use silver money was for convenience, that you could have small denominations of silver much more easily than you could with gold in terms of coins. So I think it would be a challenge. But the key thing is gold has to be the center of the system, just as it was for us. Even though we used silver, gold was the keystone.
This entire audience, of course, is on board with you regarding the necessity of a gold standard. We've had so many guests that certainly concur with your sentiments, but a return is such a sea change, I think you'd agree, that it certainly will require ample motivation and guidance, not to mention leadership. Can you give people an idea, some tangible, pragmatic methods, how this could actually work out in the real world?
Well, the key is to get the discussion going. Several months ago, for instance, Paul Volcker, who headed the Federal Reserve back in the early 1980s, observed that since we went off the Bretton Woods system, which was a gold standard in the early 70s, we've had plenty of crises, plenty of turbulence, and his message was we've got to find a better way. He didn't endorse a gold standard, but that's the key beginning, getting people to recognize we've got to find a better way. And then you can get a hold of your representatives. Email makes this very easy these days. And say, what do you think of doing what we did for 180 years with the dollar? What have you done to study the question? So that representatives know that they're going to have to be kept up to speed on this issue. Because even if they decided, declared tomorrow we're going to go on a gold standard, the fact is they wouldn't know how to do it. So we've got to get the education out there, the discussion and the education.
Well, hat tip for doing all that you can to promote that discussion and get the ball rolling. As this discussion winds down today, I wonder if you'd like to share any other comments, any other topicality that you might be watching.
I think we covered a lot of ground. Just look at what's happening around the world from unstable money of Switzerland, knowing that a lot of their trade is done with the countries denominated using the euro, is facing considerable turbulence, unnecessary. You see what's happening in other parts of the world. European Central Bank is now going to try their version of quantitative easing, which will fail. It won't stimulate the European economies. And so events are going our way, and we just have to be prepared to get the education out, as you've pointed out, you and others are doing and we're doing, and be ready when crises erupt, because they will erupt. When you're driving without a compass, you don't know where you're going, you're going to hit something.
No, I think it's well said. And folks in Russia just found out precisely how dangerous it can be to try to navigate without a compass. We saw the ruble devalue by 50%, and those who had the foresight and wherewithal to accumulate some portfolio insurance watched that investment increase by over 100% in just 7 weeks' time. Steve Forbes, it's always a pleasure, and you certainly are gracious with your time, sir. We wish you a very successful 2015.
Well, you too, and thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.